It's time!
You're listening to Game Rex with W.A. DeVinny.
I have never been more excited.
On WMUC Digital College Park.
Hello, it is Friday again. And I'm just making sure here that I am on. I sure am. Look at that. How about that? The microphone is working today, and so are we. Hello, you are listening to Game Rex on WMUC Digital College Park. I am your host, W.A. DeVinny II. Oh my goodness, this is usually when I would say, oh, we have so much to get to today. Well, you know what? We're in for a bit of a curveball. Bit of a slow news week in the video game industry, so this is what I've been waiting for. You are going to hear some news, because there's always news in the video game industry. It's just an inevitability. But today, you're going to learn something. We're going to talk about my history with video games. We're going to talk about some video game history in general. And we, of course, are going to talk about video games that I have been playing, which, unfortunately, in this final season, hasn't been a whole lot. But that's okay, because I've got something, and I've got a pretty low microphone level. Let's see if I can get you all to hear me a little better. There we go. Some days I'm too loud for my own good. Today is unfortunately not that day. Well, let's just jump right into it. Usually we start with the top video game news item. I don't want to start like that today. I have an interesting conundrum that I'm in. It is video game involved. So, my cousin is in town. He is from upstate New York. He is in to see my little brother's play. We'll call him. My family doesn't love me divulging personal information over the airwaves. We'll call him Caveman because I call him Caveman. The reason I call him Caveman is he's got these long, luscious locks with this big old scraggly beard. So, you know, me, I never miss an opportunity to be a jerk to my own family. So, of course, I call him Caveman. Anyway, Caveman is a little older than I am. Actually, I'd say, oh, goodness, probably, I want to say 5 years older than I am. No, that doesn't sound right. He's old enough so that there was always a significant enough age gap, which is where the story starts. So, I was up in his stomping grounds in upstate New York. I was, I think, four. I was definitely no older than five. Now, one thing about me, I've always been the annoying cousin. Y'all have an annoying cousin. I was Caveman's annoying cousin. Back then, he was less of, he's always been spiritually Caveman. By the way, it's a little hypocritical of me to call him Caveman, because I also have some pretty long hair at this point, but I'm clean shaven, and I think that makes me better than everyone, even though it doesn't. But anyway, so this story starts with, I love Caveman, by the way. I love you, Caveman. If just so everybody is clear, I call him Caveman in good fun. And also, again, I'd never miss a chance to be a jerk to my family. Anyway, let's start this story. So I was 5 years old. I was up in his stomping grounds, right? I go down to the basement where he is with his friend. Now, Caveman and his friend are playing some video game, and you know how four-year-olds are. God forbid something happens without a four-year-old's direct involvement, right? God forbid a four-year-old is not at the center of everything, of everybody's attention. So, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I wanted to play this game with my cousin and his friend. Now, Caveman has always been very sharp, right? Today he is an engineer. He has always been very smart, and he's always known how to tactfully handle situations. So he pulls out the case of, now that I'm saying it out loud, I assumed at the time was the video game he was playing, but honestly, it could have been just a different video game. So he says, show that to your parents. Now, this was significant to me because this was the first time I'd ever heard the phrase, show this to somebody, show that to somebody. And I took it too literally. I didn't realize that he didn't literally mean, oh, present this for your parents to observe. No, he meant, you know, see if it's okay. It had a picture of a pirate ship on it. This is going to be important in a few minutes. So I went up to the scrum of my parents talking with my extended family. I plopped the video game case right on down in front of my parents, and I got a resounding no. Now, my parents have always been... Well, my parents have never exactly been pro video game. I think it was... I was 16 years old when I got my first console that was not our old Nintendo Wii. Maybe that's because... Maybe that's the reason I collect video games today ad nauseum, because I'm chasing the high that I wanted to chase when I was 11 years old. But I digress. So that was the end of that. So when... for the past couple years, I have been trying to figure out what game it was that Caveman was playing. And I just cannot put my finger on it. So first I thought it was... because I remember there was a pirate ship. We'll get back to this, but I'm 95% sure there's a pirate ship on it. So I thought, oh, well, it's Overboard. That's the big game that has a pirate ship for the PlayStation 1. That's the thing, by the way. I am, again, 95% sure it was a PlayStation 1 game because, one, I know that he owns or at least owned a PlayStation 1. Two, I specifically remember the game being handed to me in a jewel case. And three, I don't think Caveman owned a Dreamcast, which would be the only other game system that I can think of that used that specific type of jewel case. And I know he didn't own anything like more obscure, like an Amiga. He didn't have an Amiga. It was not an Amiga. Because nobody had an Amiga. Because, fun fact, it never officially released in North America. You might be saying, well, wait, I've seen Amigas on this side of the Atlantic. Well, that's because you have a Canadian Amiga. It released in Canada. It did not release in North America. You're going to learn a lot today. Just buckle your seatbelts for that. Anyway, unfortunately for me, Overboard did not release as Overboard in North America, including Canada. It released as Shipwreckers, and that does not have a pirate ship on it. It's got, like, a little skull on it. Unfortunately, that was really the only one I could think of. So I shamefully caved and I asked ChatGPT, and I forgot that ChatGPT is just a virtual ding-dong. So first thing it said was, oh, Skull Monkeys. Well, Skull Monkeys has a skull on it. It's not, there is no pirate ship. In fact, you'd really be hard-pressed to find out that it's any sort of nautical game just by looking at the cover alone. So that was wholly unhelpful. I then thought, well, could it have been a PlayStation 2 game? Because I was thinking, because my first, I was kind of set on, well, maybe it's Sid Meier's Pirates, right? Because I have a demo for that on the original Xbox. So I knew it was, I was thinking to myself, okay, I can concede, it was almost 20 years ago that this happened. So I can concede that it could have been a PlayStation 2 game case that Caveman handed me. I don't think it was, but I can concede that I might be misremembering. Again, it was nearly 20 years ago. But Sid Meier's Pirates 2, to my knowledge, and I'll check again real fast, I don't think it released on the PlayStation 2. And I've checked this like three times. I'm going to check it one more time. We're going to see... Oh my goodness. So... we're about to go on a real tangent here. So, oh, no, you know what? I'm not about to go on a tangent. I just saw that, so first of all, again, I am correct in saying that it did not release for the PlayStation 2, which is actually kind of weird for that generation. You know what it did release for? It released for the PlayStation Portable. So, that's just kind of weird to me. But, anyway, no, it did not release for the PlayStation 2. I've checked this like five times now because I just refuse to believe it. I saw for a second that it was developed by Firaxis Games, and I was thinking to myself, oh my god, was it developed by the people who made Concord? But no, Firewalk Studios was the studio that developed Concord and then paid the eternal price for that. But even looking at the Sid Meier's Pirates cover, the pirate ships aren't what immediately jump out at you. The word pirates does. But maybe I could have misremembered because of the word pirates. But anyway, I'm going to get a chance to see Caveman tonight. I don't know if... I doubt he remembers this story. To me, it was... In the words of the Street Fighter movie, to me, it was the most impactful moment of my life. For him, it was just Tuesday. So I doubt he remembers. I'm going to ask him, though. I'm going to see if he remembers. If he does remember, then, you know, it'll be a mystery solved. But whatever. He and I, the family's watching my little brother. He is playing Ren in the musical production of Footloose, which, you know, as an older brother, it's a tricky thing because as much as I, for as awful and as terrible, as terribly as Footloose has aged, and as much as it celebrates the least deserving of celebration era of American culture, the early 80s, my brother is just a wonderful actor. So, you know, and the other conundrum I have is that it's going on at the exact same time as the Sabres game against the Bruins. So the compromise that I had originally thought of was, well, what if my brother gets up there? You know, he's the lead. He can do whatever he wants. So what if he gets up there and he goes, you know, if the Sabres are up 2-1 on the Bruins, he goes, the Sabres, Oh, I just had that. You know, I was thinking about this on the way. The Sabres are up 2-1. Josh Doan has both goals. One went off the left pole. So I've pitched that idea to my little brother. He did not approve, which stinks because, you know, it's so easy and it's such an obvious thing to do, but whatever. It's his prerogative. This is a show about video games, I promise. So we'll go into some video game news now. And by video game news, I mean movie news that is directly tied into video games. Again, it wasn't a stressful news week for the IGN writers. Let's just leave it at that. But Resident Evil movie trailer, it dropped yesterday. In a word, boo. In several words, well, that's not really a word, but I did not like it one bit. First of all, the trailer dropped on the PlayStation YouTube channel. So first I thought, oh my god, we're finally getting confirmation on this Resident Evil remake that we've heard about for so long. No, that's not what happened. We got a trailer for a stinky movie that we did know was happening. I'm just gonna start. First of all, thanks a lot, Sony. I'm just gonna start ranting now. How hard is it to make a Resident Evil movie that at least falls within the Resident Evil universe? If I didn't know any better, I would have thought. This was a trailer. If there was no Resident Evil branding on it, I would have thought it was a Silent Hill trailer. It takes all of the tropes from Silent Hill, like regret, like guilt, supernatural stuff. Here's the thing. There are layers to this, right? There are layers to this. Resident Evil is a bio-horror franchise. That's why it's called Biohazard in Japan. I've talked about this on a previous episode. It might have even been the first episode of this show that I talked about this, where Biohazard, I kind of wish that Biohazard was the name of the show of the game in North America, because it's the perfect name for it. It is a virus that infects people and turns them into zombies. That's the kind of... We're leading into the... If I were to give it a label, I'd label it scientifically plausible. Just keep that in your back pocket. Scientifically plausible. Obviously, it's not really scientifically plausible, but the suspension of disbelief isn't that crazy, right? This trailer gives you none of that. This trailer gives you zero I mean, you don't see the zombies, which sometimes, you know, like the movie Nope loved doing the unseen monster thing. This is not that movie. This, I mean, you already know what the monsters are, but this movie goes, there's this one scene that really jumped out to me where it's like a bunch of pairs of legs protruding from a doorway, and you can tell like that some of the bodies that the pairs of legs are attached to are floating. There is no floating in Resident Evil. Zero floating. No floating. None of that. So it already feels like this is taking place. Look, again, here's the big point that I need to make clear. I don't need this to be a one-to-one remake of any game. I've played the games. I don't need it to be. I would love and welcome a new story for the movies. And in fact, I think it would be better to just get a new story, because if you want the stories, the game, I for one believe that, you know, I don't want to experience the stories from the games in what I believe to be a more anemic form of storytelling in movies. I think presenting some of these stories in a movie form would be doing a disservice to these games. So I want to see a novel story. I love that. I'm glad that they were thinking outside the box. This story stinks. It's just, I mean, again, look, this is our first look. We didn't even get the chance to see any zombies. So is it fair for me to be making huge sweeping judgments of this movie from this? Probably not. But this is what Sony chose to present to the world for the first look at Resident Evil. And that's another thing that I want to mention. I did not write down the name of the actor who... I did not write down the name of the actor who plays the main character in this movie. I'm sure he's a very good actor. A lot of these scenes that I'm seeing in the trailer, I don't know if that's... How about I say this? I don't know if that's the take I would have gone with if I were the director. Some of it seems a little stilted. A lot of it seems like a independent movie, and I don't mean that in a good way. Again, nothing against the actor. I'm sure he's a good actor. I'm sure he's a better actor than I am, but they are not putting their best foot forward with this trailer. When I see scenes that look like they're inspired from something like The Ring, that's when you lose the Resident Evilness to me. Now, I have been known to have violent opinions on Resident Evil in general as a franchise, and I mean that sincerely. For example, I've had a long-held belief that the original Resident Evil game has some fatal flaws that make the game kind of stink. And yes, before you say anything, the GameCube remake is the only version I've ever played. That game stinks. You have to find your saves, which to me is ridiculous. Tank controls, they're objectively a scourge upon gaming itself. And two, stop defending tank controls. They are a vestigial remnant of the days when controllers only had D-pads. When controllers only had D-pads, which is what Resident Evil... Remember, the PS1 only had D-pads until 1996 when the Nintendo 64 came out, and then the DualShock got its thumbsticks. There were only D-pads when Resident Evil first came out. Remember, it was a, and we're actually going to talk about this a little more later on, the PlayStation controller was an amalgamation, or not an amalgamation, but a modified version of the SNES controller, and as a result, it only had a D-pad. That is the only reason why tank controls exist in survival horror games, because someone couldn't think of analog sticks. If there were analog sticks when Resident Evil came out, you'd never have heard about tank controls, ever, ever. Stop defending them. They don't add anything to survival horror games. They just make games more annoying. It would still be scary if there were no tank controls, and that is why tank controls don't exist anymore. Well, I've had this argument on. I got into a knockdown, drag-out fight with my friends who work at and also patron this video game store I've been going to for the past 6 years. I've gotten confirmation it's not an FCC violation to say the name of the store. It's Superbit in Annandale. I go there a lot. I love those guys, but in their Discord, I got into a really, really heated fight about this to the point where the store manager had to DM me saying, hey, you gotta chill out. And I did have to apologize. I took it too far, but we've been discussing this movie in that Discord, and we might get a sequel to that fight. So sorry, Norm, you're gonna have to pin me down again. I'm gonna go see the movie. I mean, for all the complaining that I'm doing, I am gonna go see it because it's a Resident Evil movie. I'm gonna go see it. I don't have very good self-control. That's not gonna stop me. I should mention before we go to our next quick hitter, there are, so people always talk about the other live action movies and how much they stink. I haven't actually seen them. I don't know if they stink or not. There are a bevy of animated Resident Evil movies that are amazing. Matt Mercer, you remember him? He's the Critical Role guy. He has played Leon Kennedy from the release of Resident Evil 6 to like 2023. He was Leon Kennedy for the longest time, and I just did not know that. I knew him from Critical Role well before, long before I knew he had anything to do with the Resident Evil series. In fact, when you look at the later animated movies, they kind of make Leon look a little more like, more and more like Matt Mercer, and I don't hate that, but the movies are fantastic. I love them. They are so faithful to the source material while telling different stories. They're amazing. So if this movie stinks, we at least have those. But I'm really hoping that this new movie does a better job of placing the movie in the universe of the games. And no, the main character running around with a health pack from the games does not count. That is not sufficient game placing. Alright, we're gonna stop that before I burst a blood vessel. We're gonna go ahead and we are going to hear about our lovely farmer's market at UMD so that my boss doesn't come in here and turn me into a tyrant bioweapon. So, here we go.
At Taz Plaza, there are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May, and fall season from August to November.
Yeah, I don't know about the free samples thing. Believe me, they're stingy these days. But yes, that is a thing that happens. So there we go. That's the farmer's market for you. Now let's talk about the steam machine. What in the wide world is going on there? So every news item, we're gonna talk briefly about this. But every news item that we see on the Steam machine is just getting worse and worse and worse. I remember the original announcement of all that stuff, the Steam machine, the Valve goggles, all of that was just, that whole announcement was absolutely amazing. That was brilliant. And I thought to myself, there's no way they can goof this up. Well, this is probably how, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is probably how the proprietors of the Ouya felt, or not the proprietors, but rather the supporters of the Ouya felt. Well, last we heard, the Steam Machine was going to be priced at like an actual computer. And when I say, I mean like $800 to $1,000. Nobody's paying $800. You know what costs $800 to $1,000 that can play Steam Machine games? A computer. A computer is what people play that stuff with, and they probably already have one. You need to... So, this is not exactly something that people are going to be jonesing for at that price point. And I think that they know that. So that's probably why latest news is that the release date's now just a big old shrug. I mean, here's the culprit, right? It's the RAM sticks. AI has made RAM cost a couple billion dollars. It's really out of Steam's control. But at the same time, ooh boy, they're not doing a good job. Problem solving is not their strong point here. My water is now just melted ice, but we're just, so it's a nice surprise whenever there's water in there. I filled it all up, and then on the walk over here, I downed it all. So we are, it's a thirsty Game Rex today, but again, Valve can't really be blamed here. They don't want... Two sticks of RAM is like $900 these days. It's ridiculous. And unfortunately, since the Steam Machine plays Steam games, it's got to be function... It's got to function a little like an actual computer. At least a little bit. I mean, and all consoles need RAM. That's the problem. Now, we talked a lot last show about, you know, loss leaders are specifically how consoles follow the Razer and Blade sales tactic, right? You know, you sell the console at a loss so that you can make all your money off the games. Well, here's the problem for Valve. They don't really need to be... There aren't a whole lot of people who are only going to buy Steam games as long as they can play them on a console. Anything can play Steam games to some degree. Any computer that does not blow up when you open it can play at least a couple Steam games. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Steam to be following, or for Valve, excuse me, to be following that sales tactic. They should be making money every time they sell a Steam machine. They should be turning a profit for each sale. And that's very difficult with the stupid RAM sticks right now. So they've been going after this like living room PC kind of thing, but it's gonna have to wait. Now the good news is one of the three things that got announced in that big announcement trailer that I absolutely loved, it was the Steam Machine, it was the Valve headset, like the Valve VR thing, and it was the new Steam controller. New Steam controller is on the market now. It is A-okay to launch because controllers don't need RAM. And from everything I'm seeing, it is like the previous iteration of the Steam controller. It's got a unique layout, but it, like the original iteration of the Valve controller, it works. I'm looking at a picture of it right now. I've yet to use it myself. there are some, let's see, there's some pros and cons. I don't always love it when the buttons and sticks sit so high on the controller, because I don't like feeling like I'm having to reach. But the sticks are located beneath the buttons, both the D-pad and the letter buttons, which, in my opinion, is important. I think the Wii U Pro Controller, one of the reasons it did not do so well is because it tried to do the thing that the Wii U gamepad did, where the sticks are on top of the buttons. And even with the gamepad, if you're playing something like Mario Kart Wii, it feels a little awkward. It's just counterintuitive. It's hard to explain fully. Maybe it's because we've gone so long with the thumbsticks being, if they're not both beneath the buttons, at least one is. Like with the Xbox controllers, all of them, I think, with the exception, all of them have been one up, one down, and then of course something like the Switch Pro Controller. They've all had, they've all been deferential to the buttons in some way. This is the same thing. But, you know, it's pretty standard, it's pretty expected. The overall shape seems a little disfigured, a little contorted. I mean, it's all, disfigured might be unfair, because it's all even, it's all flush to some degree. It's like symmetrical, there's nothing sticking out that makes it seem, you know, uncomfortable to hold, but just the whole setup in general seems like, I'd have to hold one. I'm waxing poetic here. I'd have to hold one. Steam controller is out. I'm probably not going to pick one up because I'm not a huge Steam player. I own a MacBook Pro. That's all I have to say about that in terms of Steam games. I do have a Windows machine that is actually built towards gaming. With that being said, I don't know. If I'm playing a computer game, I might as well just use the keyboard and mouse, right? So, Valve should have probably taken a big leap forward with their new gaming trifecta, but the timing was, if they had released this maybe 3 years ago, it would have taken over the world, you know what I'm saying? But they're just in a bit of a spot right now, and it's not fully their fault, but I'm curious if this is not going to be like an Ouya situation, if the Ouya never actually came out. That's quick hitter number one. Quick hitter number two, FaZe Clan, it's back, kinda. So, FaZe is one of the original gamer clans, you know, the esports teams in every esport. They folded, it was an inevitability, but they just simply could not adapt to the new look of esports teams. They were originally more so like a content creation studio, and we'll get to that. We'll return to that in a little bit. But as these quote unquote gaming clans have kind of found out, the money, you can't make your money off the gaming itself. Like 100 Thieves is, I think, cash positive, but they make all their money off of like merch sales and stuff like that. TSM is the same way. They make the majority of their money off of, you know, selling directly to consumers rather than relying on content advertising. Moist Critical is a very good resource if you want to know more about the business inner workings. He owns Moist Esports, and he has said time and again that he takes a bath on that every single year. Now, the company itself, Moist Esports, loses money all the time. I personally believe that he is personally recouping that money through... Now, to be fair, I'm not accusing him. I'm not saying he's not paying anybody. I think he is paying everybody, and that's why the business itself isn't making any money. But I think he recoups the losses through the streams he makes about... He does, like, the watch parties and stuff like that. I think he's overall personally cash positive in terms of Moist Esports. Wouldn't want to be an investor in that. And again, I mean, he's been very candid. He's about the monetary situation there. But if you're an investor, he's making money and you're not. So anyway, back to FaZe Clan really quick. FaZe Clan tried all kinds of marketing gimmicks. And for a while, it looked like they were solid because they were sponsored by all kinds of cryptocurrency trading platforms. I believe FTX might have been their big sponsor for a while. Maybe it was Coinbase. But there was big old problem. Nobody realized, maybe people should have realized, but nobody at the time realized that crypto was a ticking time bomb. I mean, FTX just straight up went under. Sam Bankman-Fried is in prison for what happened at FTX. But these guys were making money off of crypto trading platforms, and then crypto crashed because it's an extremely volatile market. It just is. Whoa, there's a voice crack for you. But it just is. So FaZe Clan, they put all their eggs in the crypto basket, which anybody would tell you that is a terrible idea. But, you know, honestly, they were a bunch of kids and they didn't listen. And eventually they folded. Not even Snoop Dogg, being an honorary member of FaZe Clan, which is a real thing, could save them. By the way, they made Snoop Dogg an honorary member. They did like one piece of content with him, and then they just never went back to that well ever again. Just not very smart. So they're back, technically, kind of ish. Let me explain. So the original FaZe Clan members, they created a new group. It's called Core. Actually, technically, it's called Core. All right, it's technically that. I mean, it's all caps. So, you know, I wrote that joke last night and I had to make it, and now it's not. It didn't come off as funny as I thought it would. But yeah, it's all caps Core, and Core stands for, and I am quoting directly from the Dexerto article on this. It stands for create, own, run, everything. That's not a sentence. That is a list. Create, comma, own, comma, run, comma, everything. I don't, you know, it's their thing. I'll let them be. So they claimed that they actually had little control or actual ownership over the organization during their time there, which, by the way, is a good thing to say, because my first thought was, okay, well, you're the idiots who sunk this thing. How are you not going to sink Core? Which I'm not over that just yet. I haven't reconciled that just yet, but it's a good thing to say, especially if you're trying to get investors in, saying, hey, we're not the idiots who sunk this. FaZe, of course, they famously restructured in 2024. I'm quoting the Dexerto article here. Ricky Banks, one of the co-founders, he pretty much gutted the business because it was a failing business. So, what was FaZe's first act as a team? Well, they moved into a $20 million content house. You did it, boys! You did it, boys! What a wonderful use of money. Now, I think they're renting it. They're not renting it. They've got $20 million content house, which, according to the Dexterto article, I always say Dexterto. It's not Dexterto. It's Dexerto. which is a much better name than Dexterito, but my brain wants to do certain things. So they launched a YouTube channel showing off their new $20 million content house. This includes a massive backyard. Again, quoting from the Dexterito article, this includes a massive backyard, a 360-degree driveway, a full-size basketball court, and a tennis court, as well as a theater room, bowling alley, gym, and a 19-car garage. Well, guess what happened today? The YouTube channel was terminated. YouTube, as of this moment, I was refreshing this, like, just before I got on air. YouTube has not provided an explanation. I can't think of an explanation. They got up to 100,000 subscribers in 7 hours. They were doing fine. It's possible that they thought that there was, like, something fishy going on. But I couldn't... And let's just... I just want to see if they know. So they haven't been... YouTube has not made a statement about this. They have not given a reason, as of now, 2:41 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, they've not given a reason for banning them from YouTube. Now, God, I hope that $20 million bill doesn't come... Well, obviously, it's not a $20 million bill. Apparently, they, from everything I'm seeing, they own this content house. They are not renting this content house. This is... Oh, boy. Again, these people aren't a whole lot older than I am. They're maybe caveman's age. We'll tie it all the way back. They're maybe caveman's age. They're not inspiring me with confidence as far as their ability to handle money goes. So, look, again, I'm rooting for them, you know? They seem like good guys. But, man, the era of the content house is over. Scott the Wise has been doing video game videos from a duplex since 2017. And he's now, the Scott the Wise brand, Blue Border Entertainment, is now worth more than FaZe, or Core, excuse me. Well, it's definitely worth a lot more than FaZe. And similarly, more famously even, Angry Video Game Nerd has been filming in pretty much the same house for, well, not the same house. He moved into his own house eventually. But 20 years now, he's just been filming in a modest-sized house. I mean, in his basement. I don't know what the Angry Video Game Nerd's driveway looks like. I don't want to know what the Angry Video Game Nerd's driveway looks like. Sometimes, I use this term loosely, content houses work. Like, okay, TSM and 100 Thieves, I already mentioned them, they have these, what John Tron famously referred to as gaming compounds, and before him, Video Game Donkey referred to as gaming compounds. They're bad uses of money, usually, but it's more like an office than anything else. This is a consolidated workplace where they can hold events, where they can, you know, they can even rent out some of this stuff. You know, it's a place where they can host sponsors. To some degree, it makes sense. This is just a house. This $20 million house is a house. House is house. This is not a good use of money. My brother, not the one who's the actor, but the other one, he's a lot better with monetary numbers than I am. I feel justified in saying that the house is not a good use of money. Again, I'm rooting for them, but good Lord. Anyway, so that quick hitter took a little longer than I thought. I'm actually going to go, okay, I'm going to teach y'all something about video game history, and then I'm going to talk about what video game I've been playing. I haven't been able to play it a whole lot because, you know, it's finals week. But I want to talk to you. Maybe you've heard about bits in the video game zeitgeist. 8-bits, 16-bits, the 64-bit consoles, the 32-bit consoles. Well, we don't really talk about them anymore. Why is that? So, in September 24, I wrote an article about why we don't really talk about them anymore. And it's Sony's fault, basically. we'll start. It all starts as it usually does with Sega. So, well, it kind of starts with Sega. Let me explain. So, when the Nintendo Entertainment System came out, the phrase "video game" was basically poison. The video game crash of 83 had just happened 2 years prior, and so far video games were looking like a fad. So Nintendo famously wanted to make their video game system appeal more as a toy than anything else. So one thing that they put on the console, because they didn't really want to put video game system, because remember, the Atari 2600, it was sometimes called the VGS, the video game system, but they instead put 8-bit system, because it was some tech spec that wasn't utterly complicated. You know, it's just one number. They put it on there, and there you go. Well, Sega found a way to turn that against them. So when they were in the console wars, the very foundation of the Sega Genesis was it was 16 bits. Well, Nintendo only has 8 bits. We have 16 bits. And it didn't need to be more complicated than that. Consumers could easily understand that 16 was twice the number that 8 was. Now, what did 16 bits mean? Well, it meant whatever the consumer wanted it to mean. It was very easy to explain. More bits equals more power. What does more power mean in the context of consoles? Whatever the consumer wanted it to mean. All they needed were the Sega fans to rub it in the Nintendo fans' face. And it's true that the Genesis was more powerful than the NES. It was a more technically impressive console. That's the reason we started caring. But the NES eventually gave way to the SNES, and Nintendo was willing to play Sega's game. They had to, you know, and they sort of had to, because the Genesis was starting to outsell the NES for a while there. It worked. This marketing worked. It was a true testament to the power of bits as a marketing tool. And so when the SNES came out, on the cartridge boxes, it said 16-bit game. It became consumer jargon. It became very relevant. So bits actually even dominated. It just dominated the fourth generation of video games. And other companies got into it as well. Like the TurboGrafx-16, that meant, you know, 16 was for 16 bits. I mean, they didn't even have to say bits at some point. Then the Atari threw their now tattered hat into the ring with the Atari Jaguar, flaunting the console's 64-bit capabilities with the tagline, "Do the math." Unfortunately, interestingly enough, the Atari Jaguar wasn't actually 64 bits. It had two 32-bit processors in there, which doesn't actually make it 64 bits. If I throw two V6 engines into my car, I can't call the car a V12 engine. I just have to call myself bad at engineering. But Atari was always kind of running a marathon with a blindfold on throughout after the Atari 2600. But the Nintendo took it a step further. They just straight up named their next console after a number. Originally they were going to call it the Ultra 64, but then they just called it the Nintendo 64. So when Sony came onto the scene, they were in an interesting situation. They were a newcomer, and more importantly, they only existed because of a failed partnership between, or the PlayStation rather, only existed because of a failed partnership between Sony and Nintendo. So what was going to happen was Nintendo was going to create a disc system add-on for the SNES. They were going to do it with Sony. The Sony executives fleeced the Nintendo executives in their contract for how the profit for this add-on was going to work out. At some point, Nintendo executives, like, reread the contract, and then they backed out of the contract. They just kind of jilted Sony, and then they went to work with Philips. They, you know, the general tech people. That also didn't end up working out. But Sony had learned a lot from working with Nintendo, specifically about consoles. So they created the Sony PlayStation. Originally, it was going to be the Nintendo PlayStation. Sony still had the rights to the name PlayStation. They still liked the name PlayStation. So they decided, well, we're going to come out with the Sony PlayStation. They really didn't have a choice except to defy the marketing jargon of bits. Because if they went into the bits war, they already knew that the next Nintendo console was going to be 64 bits. They didn't have a 64-bit console in their hands. They had a 32-bit console. They would be playing right in the Nintendo's hand if they went and they called it the PlayStation 32 or something like that. Because remember, the PlayStation 1, 32 bits. So they just omitted it from marketing materials. And they just released it as the Sony PlayStation. Now, the Sony PlayStation was a runaway hit. It was insane. So eventually, I mean, this very clearly signaled to video game companies, well, bits don't matter as much as we think they do. What matters is the games, and Sony had them in spades. Sony had a desirable control scheme. Sony had a desirable first-party offering lineup. Sony just stopped using bits, and they made the market. As the PlayStation grew in popularity, the truth was laid out for the consumer populace to see it. And that was, bits didn't really mean anything. Again, bits meant what the consumer wanted them to mean. And at this point, they no longer meant anything. They clearly didn't allow a console to run bigger games because the games on PlayStation were orders of magnitude larger than the ones on the N64, despite having less bit power. They didn't lead to better graphics because a lot of the PlayStation games looked better than those on the N64. The PlayStation had so many advantages over the N64 out of the box that bits just seemed like an afterthought. You know, N64, 64 bits. So what? So immediately in the following generation, console bits completely vanished from marketing efforts. We got the GameCube, nothing about bits. We got the Xbox, nothing about bits. We got the Dreamcast, even the Saturn, which was just another, the bungling of the Saturn is a whole other story that I do not have time to get into on this episode. Maybe I'll try to get into it next episode. But the bits were just gone. So if you're ever wondering why bits no longer get mentioned anymore, it's because Sony curb stomped Nintendo while having what should have been a less powerful console. They exposed bits for what they were, marketing jargon. So that's a little anecdote that it's always been one of my favorites. Again, I wrote something about this on GameRex, but again, Slow News Week, I love talking about stuff like this on Slow News Weeks. But for the final thing I'm going to talk about today, what am I playing now? I haven't been playing it a lot, but I've mentioned before that I absolutely love Japanese baseball. And speaking of Nintendo 64, actually, so a while ago I purchased a Japanese Nintendo 64 baseball game. It's called King of Pro Baseball. I gotta tell you, it's probably my favorite. Actually, it is definitely my favorite baseball game that I've ever played on a standard definition console. And that's not an overly specific thing. I've played plenty of different baseball games from plenty of different console manufacturers, from plenty of different developers. This is it. This is my favorite. Now, obviously, there's a language barrier. It's all in Japanese. But it's intuitive enough so I always have a blast. Now, the art style is this chibi art style. Now, if you don't know what that is, that's fine. It's a Japanese. Chibi is a Japanese word. It means small. It basically means that all the characters are cartoonized to make them look almost cute in a way. Almost, they look like the kind of thing that you'd get out of, like, one of those little capsule machines. It's an art style that is a lot more popular in Japan than in America, and that's one of the reasons I like this so much, is because the American market always will prefer stuff to be more, like, gritty and, you know, more realistic. They don't like the overly cartoonized. We don't seem to like the overly cartoonized stuff. That's why people had such a bad reaction to the Wind Waker on the GameCube originally, even though it's an amazing game. It's a brilliant game. People don't like that overly cartoonized art style. But this is a full-fledged baseball game. First of all, it has all of the, what at the time, I believe this came out in 98, and it had all of the, it has all of the Nippon Baseball League teams from that era. It has all real players. It has all real lineups, full and complete ones at that. And it is a very fleshed out baseball game. Actually, one thing that I was really, like, right down, one thing I was really impressed with was just a little baseball trivia. In baseball, if you're on base and it's a full count and there are two outs, you steal if you're on first base, you steal second base. You don't really steal second base. Just as soon as the pitcher starts to throw the ball, you run for second base. Well, why is that? Because you can't get doubled up on the base path because it's already two outs. If the batter takes, then the at-bat is going to be over. And if it's a foul ball, then who cares? It's pretty, it's baseball strategy. You kind of get down into the weeds. But on that baseball game, as soon as the pitch, if you've got a full count, two outs, as soon as that pitch gets thrown, that runner is going. And that's like the little details like that I absolutely love. And speaking of details, oh my, I've said before, Japanese baseball stadiums are my absolute favorite. They look simultaneously like baseball stadiums from 30 years in the past and 30 years in the future, just melded into one. That's the best way I can describe it. And oh my goodness, they do an amazing job of, in all the N64 detailed glory, they do a great job of capturing that feeling. It's just, and again, they use all the real stadiums of these Nippon Baseball League teams. Absolutely fantastic. Another fantastic thing, the announcer, again, I don't understand a word he's saying. Well, sometimes, like, the word for pitcher in Japanese is pitcha. So, like, I can understand some of it, but, like, bits and pieces. But, oh my goodness, the announcer, someone should have told him, actually, I'm glad nobody told him that he was calling a video game instead of a real game. He sounds so excited in everything he says. He's like, oh, back to home! Oh, da-da-da! Oh, da-da-da! I can't, like, directly quote him because, again, Japanese. But, my God, that man put his everything into doing commentary for this baseball video game. The only thing I don't like about this game is there's this background music that sounds like really bad carnival music, and unfortunately, like, there's this whistle, like one of the ones that, like, a referee might use, that seems to be the primary instrument in that song. I do not like that, but you can turn it off, so it's fine. And if you're wondering how I've been navigating the menus, I've been using Google's translate, like, the picture translate feature, and I've just been kind of stumbling through it that way. It took me a while to figure out all the controls and what have you, but it's worked out. It's not the last time I'm going to play that game. I absolutely love it, and I There's a bit of a language barrier. Now, is that the reason I gave up 4 runs in the first inning that I played in the game? Probably not. Probably just I wasn't really... Well, there were a couple reasons I gave up 4 runs and quite a few triples, actually. But that is a very... Again, that's king of professional baseball. I've been